I always say that perhaps more than any other, three people defined the Islamic civilization the most, after Prophet Muhammad, of course. The first is Umar ibn al-Khattab, whose decisions both as Abu Bakr's advisor and as the second caliph protected Islam in its infancy by defeating the Eastern Roman and Sassanid Empire. Then comes Abd al-Malik, the man who restored the Umayyad Caliphate after the Second Civil War. He defined what Hugh Kennedy calls the Executive Caliphate. Then comes the man this video is about, the second caliph of the Abbasid dynasty, Caliph Abu Ja'far al-Mansur. Abu Ja'far was born in Humaymah, in modern-day southern Jordan, on the Abbasid family estate. Even though his father was the leader of the town, Ja'far grew up in a humble environment. He had traveled extensively throughout his years and had even been part of a revolt against the Umayyads, but his role, while unclear, was certainly insignificant. When the Abbasid revolution was in full swing, he traveled with his brother to Kufa, where his brother, who took the title of As-Saffa, was sworn as the caliph. Abu Ja'far stayed with his brother throughout his reign. However, he wasn't there at the end. When As-Saffa, the first caliph of the Abbasid dynasty, passed away in 754 CE, Abu Ja'far was away on pilgrimage to Mecca. While his uncle, Abdullah, tried to make a bid for the throne, Abu Ja'far was able to secure the loyalty of Abu Muslim, which allowed him to become the caliph in 754 CE. He chose the title or laqab of Al-Mansur, the victorious. As soon as he became caliph, he realized that he wasn't the most powerful man in his own empire. The man he had used to secure the caliphate was, and Al-Mansur decided to change that. Abu Muslim was the man who had led the army against the Umayyads and had served as the muscle of the Abbasid revolution. He was in control of the army that the Abbasids relied on. Soon after the installment of the new caliph, Abu Muslim arrived in Iraq. This was a great chance that Al-Mansur couldn't let pass. He invited Abu Muslim to Kufa. Abu Muslim, away from his men in Khorasan, was reluctant, but the caliph insisted. Abu Muslim decided to go to Kufa. The caliph was warned again and again that what he was planning was a gamble, and if he lost, it would mean the end of his dynasty. Abu Muslim finally arrived in Kufa and went to see his cousin Isa, who lived there. The next morning, Abu Muslim went to see the caliph. Isa was to join him later. Even at that point, Al-Mansur wasn't sure who he could trust. Abu Muslim was very popular, and if the plot was exposed, Al-Mansur would be in grave danger. He asked one of his commanders and his guards if they would kill Abu Muslim. The commander reluctantly agreed, soon after Abu Muslim arrived in the caliph's tent. Expecting honors and gifts over everything he had done for the Abbasids, he was shocked when the caliph started cursing him. Before Abu Muslim could even speak, the caliph clapped to signal the guards, who entered and cut Abu Muslim down. To ensure, his throat was cut and he was wrapped in a carpet and thrown on the side of the tent. When Isa arrived, he inquired about Abu Muslim. "He's rolled up over there," the caliph said. Then an extra tent was set up next to the caliph's tent to give the illusion that Abu Muslim was staying there, while the caliph tried to do something about Abu Muslim's people. Al-Mansur sent them all gifts and robes and asked them to join him. Most of them joined, while a small group tried to fight, claiming that "we have sold our master for pieces of silver." They were defeated soon after. If things had gone the other way, if Abu Muslim had lived, it's possible that the Abbasids would have become puppets of him and his succeeding commanders. I guess that'll have to wait. Abu Muslim's body was dumped in the Tigris. There was another threat to the dynasty. While the Abbasids belonged to the Prophet's family, they weren't his descendants. His actual descendants, the Alids, still had a better claim. The people still wanted one of them, and well, Al-Mansur understood that sooner or later, one of them would rise up. He tried to keep them close to make sure he knew everything they were up to. However, in 756 CE, two brothers, Muhammad and Ibrahim ibn Abdullah, disappeared. Al-Mansur realized that something was up. Over the next 8 years, Al-Mansur moved heaven and earth trying to find them. He came close a few times, but to no avail. In 762 CE, he arrived in Medina to finally put an end to it. Al-Mansur had all the Alids in Medina arrested and taken to Iraq. Muhammad tried to give himself up, but his father, who was also arrested by Al-Mansur, told him to keep trying to recruit supporters. Muhammad was planning to launch a two-pronged attack. He would raise an army from Medina, and his brother Ibrahim would raise one from Iraq. The plan had two problems. First of all, it was rushed. And secondly, while Medina was the symbolic heart of Islam, it was a terrible place to start a rebellion from. Sure, Medina was the city that gave refuge to the Prophet when he had nothing, and the city had served as the Prophet's capital. But Medina relied on supplies from other places in the empire. It couldn't even feed its own population, so it was vulnerable. In September of the same year, Muhammad led his followers into the mosque of the Prophet. The mosque shared a wall with the governor's house. From there, his men attacked the governor's house. Muhammad, who was called the Pure Soul by now, urged his followers not to kill anyone. The governor was expelled and the people swore an oath of allegiance to Muhammad. Al-Mansur was overjoyed at the news of Muhammad having chosen Medina. All he had to do was cut supplies to Medina to starve the rebels. Al-Mansur dispatched an army of 4,000 to attack Medina. Muhammad's followers told him to leave and set base in Egypt. However, Muhammad, being an idealist, decided not to leave the city of the Prophet. Not only that, but he decided to do what his ancestor, the Prophet himself, had done to defend Medina. He dug a trench. In fact, they even found bricks from the Prophet's trench, which they considered a sign from God. The city was put under siege, and by December, it was clear that the rebellion had lost. Muhammad told his followers that they were free to leave if they so wished. The Abbasid army used doors from neighboring houses to build a bridge over the trench and entered Medina on December 6th. By evening, Muhammad had been killed. Legend says that he died fighting with the sword of the Prophet until he was hit with an arrow. Muhammad's head was removed and sent to Al-Mansur, who displayed it in the capital. His brother Ibrahim also raised a rebellion in Iraq, which met the same fate. The final threat that the new caliphate faced was an Umayyad prince, who had escaped to Iberia and established an emirate there. Al-Mansur sent an army with an investiture to rule Iberia in his name. The army was defeated and his governor's head was sent to him. While Al-Mansur was definitely scared, he was content with the sea God had put between him and Abdul Rahman. He decided that the threat was not serious enough to worry about. Other than securing the caliphate, the most important thing he did was set up a system of government. His new government needed a new city. The city obviously had to be in Iraq, and so after surveys, Al-Mansur chose a site close to Ctesiphon on the river Tigris. The new city was to be named Baghdad. At the heart of Baghdad was a round city called the City of Peace. This is where the caliph and much of his bureaucracy would reside. The city began construction in 762 CE and took 4 years to complete. Then it was expanded just 2 years later to accommodate everyone who was coming to Baghdad. Unfortunately, not much of the original Baghdad remains today, but fortunately, when the caliph went to Syria in 771 CE, he commissioned another city near Raqqa. This city was modeled after Baghdad, and its ruins have fared better than that of Baghdad, so we can get an idea of what Baghdad was like. Baghdad was essentially two cities, the City of Peace on the west bank of Tigris and Rusafa on the east bank. The details of the city are a story for another day. Large swaths of the new city were given as gifts and prizes to Al-Mansur's chosen people. Al-Mansur was a political genius. He knew who could be bought and how. Part of the reason for the new city was to give land away to secure loyalties. While military action was always an option, he preferred diplomacy and perfected the Abbasid tradition of textile diplomacy. Baghdad not only brought the establishment on his side, but also the people. The city, due to its ideal location, became a bustling commercial metropolis. The people saw the success of the city and, to some extent, received a share of that success. They slowly started to side with the Abbasids. With simple strokes of genius and some luck, Al-Mansur had brought the commanders and the public on his side, making himself powerful and popular. Those who play Crusader Kings can definitely appreciate what Al-Mansur had done. The remainder of Al-Mansur's reign was fairly peaceful. The frontiers were secured and internal discontent was quashed. Now, let's talk a bit about the kind of person that Al-Mansur was. Al-Mansur was one of those complicated historical figures. He was pious, or at least what is considered pious in an Islamic society. He hated music and wine. He was also somewhat approachable. He would lead the Friday prayer in person and make grand speeches before. Anyone who went to the Grand Mosque on a Friday could see and even talk to him. Arabs respected the art of oratory very much, and Al-Mansur is the only Abbasid caliph to have a good reputation in that regard. Later Abbasid caliphs abandoned this tradition and led increasingly secluded lives. He was a very organized man. Today would call him a very professional guy because he was relatively easygoing in private, but when he wore his official robes, his whole personality would change. He'd become ruthless and calculating. One example of his ruthlessness, something I found very shocking and unbelievable, comes from Al-Tibri, and if you think Umayyads were monsters, you might want to hold your beer. As Hugh Kennedy writes, his love of the system extended in more sinister directions. a woman called Jamra, who had been Mansur's perfumer and knew some of the darker secrets of the palace, told a chilling story, which could have come out of one of those gruesome episodes of the Arabian Nights. Before he left on a pilgrimage to Mecca, on which he died, he gave instructions of a very particular sort to his daughter-in-law Rita, wife of his son and heir Mahdi, who was at the time in Iran. He gave her the keys to all his storerooms, but there was one he was only to open when she was absolutely sure of his death. Even then, only she or her husband were allowed to go in. When he heard that his father had died, Mahdi hurried to Baghdad to claim his inheritance, and Rita told him about the key to the special store. The young couple then went to open the store. They found themselves in a vast and cavernous vaulted chamber in which were laid out the bodies of all the members of the family of Ali, whom he had executed, no doubt well mummified in the dry Mesopotamian air. There were a large number of all ages, from infants to old men. In the ear of each corpse was a label, carefully inscribed with the name and genealogy of the victim. Mahdi, who had hoped to be able to heal the rift with the Alids, was horrified by what he saw. He ordered the corpse be removed secretly and buried in a common grave, and a shop was constructed over the site. It's pretty chilling to think about that, but it's possible that Al-Mansur executed all the members of the Alids he arrested in Medina. So let's just move on. In terms of administrative tasks, Al-Mansur was very diligent and personally attended to every little thing. During the construction of Baghdad, he was very active and would often obsess over things. On one occasion, he asked his builders how much material was required for a specific task. When the builders said that they were unsure, he took to calculating everything himself and ordered materials by his calculation, which was enough for the task. He was famous for never wasting any money. He once pretended to be sick because his son was asking him for money. He often had old, worn-out garments patched. He deployed a vast network of officers and spies throughout the empire and created an organization called Barid. Much of his day was spent analyzing intelligence gathered by the organization. When Muhammad, the pure soul, rebelled in Medina, the news traveled 1100 kilometers in just 9 days. That's how efficient the system was. The caliph set out for a pilgrimage to Mecca in the summer of 775 CE. He was very ill and considered that death was near, so he wanted the spiritual benefit of dying in the holy precinct. Caliph Abu Ja'far Abdullah al-Mansur died on 21st of October 775. He reigned a few days short of 22 years. His corpse was propped up on a chair behind a curtain to give the illusion that he was alive, while his son and heir al-Mahdi took the oath of allegiance from the establishment. Even though al-Mansur left 12 sons, the succession went really smoothly, which won't be the case for most future caliphs. See you next time.